You got all that? Okie dokie, singleness. From that passage in 1 Corinthians 7, but a couple of other passages as well. Can I just thank Jill for praying so helpfully for the Painter family as they finish up with CMS, and also to Gwyn for helpfully leading us in prayer as always. And Helen, thank you for the kids spot, which is a great summary of what we're going to be thinking about now. So we are still in our series, Created in the Image. We're thinking about singleness, as I said. Let's start with single households in Australia. The 2021 census counted more than 10.8 million private dwellings across Australia. The average number of people per household decreased from 2.6 in 2016 to 2.5 in 2021. Census reflects that Australian families come in many shapes and forms. The 2021 census counted 5.5 million couple families, of which 53% have children living with them and 47% do not have children living with them. 2.5 million families with children under the age of 15 years. And then, excuse me, as we think about singleness, there are more than 1 million one-parent families. It's 1,068,268. As a proportion of families, this is increasing slowly from under 15% in 1996 to nearly 16% in 2021. This image here tells us that 25.6% of Australian households are lone households, and 3.9% are group households. So there's a quick snapshot of Australian households. 29.5% are lone or group households. Add to that over 1 million single parent families. If my maths is right, we're talking about around a third of Australians who are widowed, divorced, or never married. So it's important that we understand the Bible's teaching on the subject. And we're going to begin with Jesus' teaching in Matthew chapter 19. As we saw last week, in Matthew 19, Jesus is asked a question about divorce. In response to that question, he affirms God's good design for marriage, which is given to us in Genesis chapter 2, emphasizing that God designed marriage to be lifelong. Even so, Jesus is realistic about sin, in particular, the sin of sexual immorality, marital unfaithfulness. This sin, Jesus says, is grounds for divorce. Divorce is permitted in such circumstances because the marriage bond has been broken. The Pharisees wanted no-fault divorce, divorce for any and every reason. Jesus limits it. In verse 10 of chapter 19, the disciples respond to Jesus' teaching. I don't think I have this verse. No, I don't. The disciples said to him, "If this is the situation between a husband and wife, that is, that marriage is lifelong and you shouldn't divorce for any and every reason, they say it is better not to marry." Jesus picks up on their statement, "It is better not to marry," and says something surprising, at least surprising to first century Jewish culture. Jesus replied, "Not everyone can accept this word, that is, it is better not to marry, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by others, and there are those who choose to live like eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. The one who can accept this should accept it. Some choose chaste singleness for the sake of the kingdom of heaven, Jesus says. Jesus himself is the prime example of this, never married. The Apostle Paul is another example in Scripture. In more recent times, I think of this gentleman here, John Stott, a great evangelical preacher and teacher and theologian of the 20th century. And closer to home, John Chapman, Chapo, a gifted evangelist and teacher and trainer of a generation of evangelists. These two men are great men. I encourage you to read and listen to anything you can find from these two gentlemen. And they both chose singleness for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Someone's phone's talking. Hello? There's John Stott's website, lots of resources, and there's a great book by Chapo, The Know and Tell the Gospel. I'll go back to Mr. John Stott because he writes a little comment about Jesus' teaching in Matthew 19, which is very helpful. Might be translating me. John Stott says, "I doubt if we could find a clearer answer to this than in the recorded teaching of Jesus himself in Matthew 19. He was talking about eunuchs, meaning people who remain single and celibate. He listed three reasons why people do not marry. First, for some, it is because they were born that way. This could include those with a physical defect or with a homosexual orientation. Such are congenitally unlikely to marry. Second, there are those who were made that way by men. This would include victims of the horrible ancient practice of forcible castration, but it would also include all those today who remain single under any compulsion or external circumstance. One thinks of a daughter who feels under obligation to forego marriage in order to care for her elderly parents. Third, others have renounced marriage because of the kingdom of heaven. These people, who are under no pressure from within or without, voluntarily put marriage aside, either temporarily or permanently, in order to undertake some work for the kingdom which demands single-minded devotion. So whether we are single or married, we need to receive our situation from God as his own special grace gift to us," he concludes. Okay, so a helpful comment by John Stott on that passage. If we come back to the example of the Apostle Paul, we have his extended teaching on the subject of singleness in that passage we heard in 1 Corinthians 7. I should say that I dealt with 1 Corinthians 7 in more detail in two talks in our 1 Corinthians series a year or so ago, might be 2 years ago. If you want to fuller explanation of 1 Corinthians 7 alone, you can find those talks on our YouTube channel. But the Apostle's teaching in 1 Corinthians 7, he has things to say about singleness, marriage, divorce, and remarriage. He just about covers it all, as you heard, and we didn't even hear the whole chapter, just the second half. In the center of the chapter is an important principle. And that important principle is remain as you are. Let me just read the verses just prior to what we heard. "Nevertheless, each person should live as a believer in whatever situation the Lord has assigned them, just as God called them. This is the rule or better translated, general principle I lay down in all the churches. Was a man already circumcised when he was called? He should not become uncircumcised, that is Jewish and keeping the Old Testament law. Was a man uncircumcised when he was called? He should not be circumcised. You don't have to become a Jew to be a Christian. Each should person remain in the situation they were in when God called them. Were you a slave when you were called? Don't let it trouble you, although if you can gain your freedom, do so. I'll skip to 24. Brothers and sisters, each person, as responsible to God, should remain in the situation they were in when God called them. So three times he says it in this section, remain as you are. It's not a rule, as the NIV translates it in verse 17, it's a general principle. The fact that it's a general principle is seen in that if slaves can gain their freedom, they should. In verse 25 and following, Paul applies this general principle to the never validly married, as we call it on our marriage documentation. Virgins was the terminology in the first century Corinth. Okay, verse 25. Now about virgins, those who have never been married before, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. Because of the present crisis, I think that it's good for a man to remain as he is. There's that general principle. Are you pledged to a woman? Do not seek to be released. Are you free from such a commitment? Do not look for a wife. Okay, so what is the present crisis that he is talking about? He's talking about the fact that we are living in the last days, the period between Christ's first and second coming. Now is the time, we are living in the period when the gospel needs to go out for people to hear the gospel, turn to God, receive Jesus and be saved before the coming judgment. We're living in a period of urgency, not apathy, this present crisis. Because of this, because of the present crisis, Paul says, I think that it's good for an unmarried person to remain unmarried. He's already said this earlier, back in verse 8, which we didn't hear read. Now, to the unmarried and to the widows, I say it's good for them to stay unmarried as I do. General principle, remain as you are. However, please hear this, it is not a rule. It's not a rule. And he says that. He says, if we do marry, you have not sinned. So verse 28, but if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. So you're free to marry if the opportunity arises. If you develop a relationship with a suitable partner, an important part of that suitability is that they are in the Lord, verse 39, that is a Christian, and you have a decision to make, marry or stay single, it's not a right, wrong decision. It's a good, better decision. It's good to be single. It's good to marry. Good, better. Not right, wrong. As Helen helpfully pointed out in the children's talk, for both marriage and singleness are a good gift from God. In verse 7, I wish that all of you were as I am, that is single, but each of you has your own gift from God. One has this gift, another has that. The gift of singleness is not, as some wrongly think, having low sex drive or anything like that. It's not some kind of something within you that means that God's given you some special gift where you have no desire to be in a marriage relationship. The gift is the status of being single. There are some advantages to being single, especially when it comes to devotion to Jesus and his gospel, for a married person has divided interests. So we heard this, but those who marry will face many troubles in this life. Married couples can testify. And I want to spare you this. What I mean, brothers and sisters, is that the time is short, for this world in its present form is passing away. I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife. And his interests are divided, vice versa, for women, for wives. We could add children to this when a married couple welcome children and grandchildren, time, effort, money to provide and to care for. Such responsibility can be all-consuming, certainly at different stages of life. It can be very consuming, leaving little time, energy and funds for the Lord's affairs. On the other hand, an unmarried person can be single-minded in their devotion to the Lord. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit, but a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I'm saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. Singleness has its advantages as far as Paul is concerned because it provides the opportunity to be undivided in devotion to the Lord without the additional responsibility of immediate family. In these last days, when it matters most of all, when what matters most of all is the salvation of men, women, and children. And that's why he personally chose, why he personally chose to remain unmarried, and that's why others have made that decision. And others who, because of circumstances or lack of opportunity to marry a suitable partner, have chosen to make the most of their gift of singleness for the Lord and his kingdom. And we honour such brothers and sisters. We honour you. Not that being unmarried is always easy, or that every unmarried person is 100% content in their singleness 100% of the time. We need sensitivity and care and less speaking and more listening to understand and support. Forgive me for speaking so much from here this morning. During the week, I read an article on Desiring God, on how we as a church can serve the singles. Here are some helpful points from that article. Please remember that marriage is not the ultimate prize. Sometimes we can communicate that marriage is the ultimate prize, but we know that the ultimate prize is heaven, the marriage between Christ and his church. Singles actually remind us that that is the marriage that we all look forward to and reminds us that there will be no other marriage in heaven. Another point, church can provide opportunities for socialising, both formally, that is in church events, and informally as we organise and invite and include in what we are doing. Another point, the singles are actually men and women. As we know, God has created men and women differently, so there will be different needs that we need to be responsive to. Single people need opportunities to serve. As we've just seen in 1 Corinthians 7, some singles have greater capacity to serve because they don't have the added responsibility of immediate family. So we want to provide opportunity. At the same time, single people are not workhorses, this article emphasizes, to be taken advantage of. Single people need to rest too, time to socialize, hang out with extended family and friends. Often singles take on greater responsibility in caring for extended family. We need to be mindful of all these things. It's important that we care well for one another, whether single, married, divorced, or remarried. I give thanks to God for what I see and hear in this regard here at St. Paul's. I see a lot of care going on, support, encouragement, practical help. I hear of it going on through Bible study groups and through individuals and families looking out for one another, whatever the marital status. May this continue. If you feel that you haven't been cared for or supported in your situation, please let me know so that we can learn how to do a better job into the future. Last place I want us to go this morning is in terms of widows and widowers. So we return briefly to the last couple of verses in 1 Corinthians, where Paul has advice for widows. He says, a woman is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to marry anyone she wishes, but he must belong to the Lord. I said this before, but it's worth saying again, marry in the Lord is the apostle's strong advice. To those who have the ability to choose a marriage partner, like widows, you know, adults, well and truly adults, been married before, widows or widowers, choose a Christian partner. Remembering in first century culture that those who were getting married for the first time, the marriages had been arranged. It's the widows that are free to choose. First marriages were not chosen, they were arranged. Anyway, in my judgment, she's happy if she stays as he is. She is, Paul says, I think I too have the Spirit of God. Caring for widows. To finish up, I want to highlight the Bible's particular concern for widows and by extension, widowers. I want to read from 1 Timothy chapter 5, which has quite a bit to say about this. Before I read it, I just want to remind you of the first century context of no social security, no pension. There was no help from the state. So care was to come firstly from extended family, and then secondly, there was no extended family support from the church. So 1 Timothy 5. Hear a bit of flipping of Bibles. That's great. So if you're turning to it, 1 Timothy 5 from verse 3. Again, it's the Apostle Paul writing to Timothy. He says, give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn first of all to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family and so repaying their parents and grandparents. For this is pleasing to God. The widow who is really in need and left all alone puts her hope in God and continues night and day to pray and ask God for help. But the widow who lives for pleasure is dead even while she lives. Give the people these instructions so that no one may be open to blame. Anyone who does not provide for their relatives and especially for their own household has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Very strong words. The importance of responsibility for extended family, particularly widows and widowers. So we see the responsibility that we individually, personally have towards our relatives who are in need and the responsibility we as a church have to those who have no extended family support. The government can help with basic financial support, but there are other needs in addition to financial support, obviously. Relational support, love and care, community, making sure no one is lonely or isolated. Maybe practical help around the home at times when needed. Transport, for example. This is our responsibility as a church family. Certainly towards widows and widowers, but also by extension to divorcees and to the never married. Inclusion in what we are doing socially, relational support and encouragement. We all need that, don't we? We all need it. Sometimes more, sometimes less. And again, I see and hear this happening here on a Sunday and through Bible study groups and at other times when we spend time with one another. This is great. This is great. But we want to see this happening more and more. By this you will know, they will know that you are my disciples, Jesus says, by their love for one another. So let me finish with a prayer. It's a prayer that we will grasp the love of God, the love of Christ. I pray that this will work through us to one another. This, again, is the Apostle Paul in Ephesians 3. I pray that out of his glorious riches, God may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power, together with all the Lord's holy people, to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. We're going to sing a song in response.